Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. In our last episode, we just dove into Washington's farewell address. And the last paragraph that I read, which was paragraph 10, covered religion, where he first makes comment of religion. And I think it's important, and I actually got some feedback. I missed it. You said he was talking about religion. Where did he talk about religion? Well, so, I failed to put it into context because we were actually, as soon as I closed, we were going into the end of the episode. So in the middle of paragraph 10, there is one, and typically George Washington's sentences are long. There is a very short and succinct sentence, and he says, "With slight shades of difference, you have the same religion, manners, habits, and political principles." There it is, folks. The most important part of this aspect of religion, because most people want to tell you that America was not founded based on religion, and I am here to tell you it was, because they were pretty much Christian. Now, if you understand that there were stark differences between the states, I mean, the Puritans, they actually created, Massachusetts was responsible for creating a couple of other states, Rhode Island and I think New Hampshire, if not even Connecticut. They drove out people that were teaching apostate principles of Christianity, which in turn created new states. And so if you're here to stay, or if you are thinking in supporting the secularist idea of America, then you'd be mistaken. And I only say that because if you understand the paradigm of these people, at this point in time, religion was just as important as a matter of fact, it was more important to these folks than fashion, than economics, and a lot of other things that you and I think are a much higher priority today. We cannot underestimate nor undermine just how important religion was to these folks, because as he talks about it, he lists religion, manners, habits, and political principles in that order, listing religion first and foremost. Because religion, you have to understand, the majority of these states were erected because of religious persecution. So it was about religion to them. Thinking contrary to that is just, it hurts my head thinking that, oh, well, it wasn't about religion. It's almost like telling your wife or your significant other that, you know, they're getting frustrated, they're feeling upset because of what you did, they're embarrassed, and it's like telling them, don't feel that way. You can't tell somebody how they feel, and you cannot tell regarding the true history of America and say it wasn't about religion. That would be a blatant lie. So, as you know, we're in Washington's farewell address. We're going into paragraph 11. And before I do, I just need to remind you that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. The reason why this show is set apart from all other shows, it has nothing to do with your host, G.R. Mobley. It has everything to do with the founding documents, these founding principles that are, you know, just flowing from these documents. I beseech you to make this show the national show, because it's not necessarily whether I'm teaching you. I am giving you the source documents so that you can actually have a full understanding yourself. reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. And having these founding documents helps you understand the truth. This is the truth of our founding. It is tantamount to Scripture. But see, the issue with Scripture and religion is because there is this subjectivity. There are alternate religions and so forth out there regarding your philosophical beliefs that you could gravitate from one faith to another. But when it comes to the founding of this government, there is no gravitating, migrating, or anything other than the bedrock that this Constitution Republic was founded upon. And there's no altering that. And that's why these documents are so important, so that we can understand what was created, what was instilled, and where we are today, and how it is no longer built upon that same bedrock. They have moved into the shifting sands of progressivism. And that's why this show is set apart from all the other shows. I don't want to consider myself necessarily an educator, and I hate to sound like some babbling, you know, progressive, or, you know, somebody, you know, in the, what do you want to call it, the therapy, counseling, or facilitator. I am here to try to give you the facts. It's all about the facts, ma'am, just like Dragnet. It's all about the facts, ma'am. Anyway, let us dive into these words. But before I do, let me remind you that we have a very important listen line for you to tune into. And that listen line number is 605-562-4209. So if you can't listen to this show, you can't stream it, you can't air it, and you want to make sure you don't miss it, then the listen line is the way to actually hear this. And so, you know, what's better than, instead of streaming or anything else, just, you know, being plugged into your phone like you're in a phone conversation, you're sitting there at work and somebody comes up and you go, yeah, I'm on, and like you're on the phone. And people will leave you alone for the hour that you're listening. Now, I do not endorse the concept of not giving an honest wage for an honest dollar. You are cheating your employer if you are listening and billing your time or getting compensated, unless you are actually doing work. Now, if you could do work while you're listening, please work away, listen away, and we're all happy. So anyway, let me also ask you, because yesterday in our previous episode, I forgot to mention that we actually have a sponsor, Red State Coffee. If you would please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org, click on the link that will send you to the Red State Coffee page in eBay, and buy yourself a bag of Red State Coffee, grind or beans, and please enjoy yourself. If you love coffee, enjoy yourself, and call me up, 425-270-5416, and let us know what you think. We would love to hear your unvarnished opinion and your thoughts on that, because it is those types of things that we absolutely want to use for our marketing for that. So with that, let me just dive forward into Washington's farewell address. We're going to be starting on paragraph 11. Now, there are still a few pages to go here. This was a doozy of a farewell address. In my format of font size and everything else, it comes out to about 11 pages. And so I hope I'm not boring you, but I think that the words of the framers, and especially in their official capacity, is not only necessary, I think it's insightful, so that you can actually understand what they were doing and what they gave us. So paragraph 11 starts off with this: "But these considerations, however powerfully they address themselves to your sensibility, are greatly outweighed by those which apply more immediately to your interest. Here, every portion of our country finds the most commanding motives for carefully guarding and preserving the union of the whole. The North, now, so he gets into the regional areas. The North is an unrestrained intercourse with the South, protected by the equal laws of a common government, finds the productions of the latter great additional resources of the maritime and commercial enterprise and precious materials of manufacturing industry. The South, in the same intercourse, benefiting by the agency of the North, sees its agriculture grow and its commerce expand, turning partly into its own channels, the seamen of the North, it finds its particular navigation invigorated, and while it contributes in different ways to nourish and increase the general mass of the national navigation, it looks forward to the production or the protection of a maritime strength to which itself is unequally adapted. The East, in a like manner, intercourse with the West, already finds, and in the progress improvement of interior communications by land and water, will more and more find a valuable vent for the commodities which it brings from abroad or manufactures at home. With that, we will have to take back or come back to this after these two promos, and we will. As Washington is addressing the differences of the regional areas of the Republic. So we got these two promos and we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. Okay, so we're covering the differences and maybe the symbiotic relationship between the different regions of this constitutional republic. And so he just talked about the East, and now he talks about it as it performing this vent or this flowing of the raw goods and products coming from the West. And he says, the West derives from the East supplies requisite to its growth and comfort, and what is perhaps of still greater consequence it must of necessity owe the secure enjoyment of indispensable outlets for its own productions to the weight, influence, and the future maritime strength of the Atlantic side of the Union. Now, I want to point out right here, he already recognizes that there's another side to the Union. It's the Pacific side, that they will be conquesting and, whatever, growing the Republic. Now, I know that we just had Columbus Day, and there's the movement to try to take away Western expanse and to try to make it seem like it's a bad thing. I'm here to tell you, if you historically look at all different cultures and societies, even though we had done what Jackson did was atrocious, it was unforgivable in the people he killed by kicking the Indians out of the South or the indigenous folks, whatever. Long story short, had the Spaniards been the ones who settled the United States, then there would no longer be indigenous people. There would have been a new race of Americanas or whatever, because just as we understand the Mexicans is a new race that was a merger between the indigenous folks and the Spaniards. That's how tyrannical, that's how despotic that culture was, in contrast to the northern cultures. They wanted to respect the autonomy. They were living at that point in time. They had been witnessing that type of thing, and they thought it was deplorable. And the reason they didn't engage in it was because they felt it was deplorable. So however they moved forward, a lot of them did not understand the consequences of not following the Constitution. But bottom line, Western progress was moving forward, not necessarily to kill, not necessarily with the intent to commit genocide, as we're all being taught in this new politically correct slant on, building white guilt in America, that we all should feel really bad that we're white or what have you, that this culture is what it is, because it is this culture that has created the standard for individual liberty and individual sovereignty. And we do have some problems that we have to fix, but there's only one way to fix them. You cannot unring the bell. But there are ways to make sure that people have the equitable opportunities moving forward under this exact same system. I'm an advocate for allowing anybody that feels they would rather live under the rule of another government, letting them go. Period. Let people, as a matter of fact, I believe Antifa and those people who want to undermine and destroy our government, I believe that we need to let them choose where they're going. They're not staying here. Where are you going to go? What government do you want to go to where you feel that you can thrive in the government of your choice, because you're not going to destroy our government so you can feel like you are thriving in oppressing us. Sorry, that's not going to happen. So we need, and that's why we're going to look at the Tory acts once we're finished with the farewell address here. But I will also say this, that we will probably do a little bit of marketing, to catch you up on who's dead and who deserved to die or what have you, right? Anyway, because I know marketing is important for a lot of people, because that's why they listen to talk radio, to talk about the current events or listen to somebody's views or what have you. But anyway, so he's talking about the Atlantic side with the acknowledgement that there is another side. And he goes on, Washington goes on and says, directed by an indissoluble community of interest as one nation, any other tenure by which the West can hold this essential advantage, whether derived from its own separate strengths or from an apostate and unnatural connection with any foreign power, must be intrinsically precarious. While then, every part of our country thus feels an immediate and particular interest in union, all the parts combined cannot fail to find in the united mass of means and efforts greater strength, greater resource, proportionably greater security from external danger, a less frequent interruption of their peace by foreign nations, and what is of inestimable value, they must derive from union an exemption from those broils and wars between themselves which so frequently afflict neighboring countries not tied together by the same governments, which their own rival ships alone would be sufficient to produce, but which opposite foreign alliances, attachments, and intrigues would stimulate and embitter. This is a pretty insightful point that he points out, because in the old Articles of Confederation and before that, each state was independent, and there were lots of frictions that were obviously very noticeable between the different states. And even North and South Carolina had their differences, as well as Georgia and so forth. And so I think the astute, you know, vision or insights here really kind of helps, because what they created in this one union, even though it was very limited and defined, what they created was the umbrella of protection to allow these states to kind of come together more in a more harmonious or a symbiotic relationship. And so he goes on and he says, and this is paragraph 13, we're still in 13, hence, likewise, they will avoid the necessity of those overgrown military establishments which, under any form of government, are inauspicious to liberty and which are regarded as particularly hostile to Republican liberty. Now, let me just say this, that when he talks about the military and an overgrown establishment of military under any form of government, it becomes an enemy to liberty. If you understand what I have been telling you regarding the federal enforcement forces that are occupying every state, from the IRS to the ATF, to the BLM, to the Forestry Department, and so forth, it is the militia's duty to enforce federal constitutional law. Now, because there became such a large growth of some of the things that are going on because of the growth of the Republic, there needs be a transition from a militia being a voluntary force to the militia being a paid force. So with that, that's a conversation that I think has to happen. Now, let me close out paragraph 13 with what Washington says as, in this sense, it is that your union ought to be considered as a main prop of your liberty, and that the love of one ought to endear you to the preservation of the other. Right? I mean, if the others fall because of some outside influences or some nefarious purposes or what have you, that affects your security. Anyway, and that was the whole, you know, essence of the union, which most people, I don't think they realized. They marginalized, you know, how immature this nation really was and the federal government's limitations to what they could do. And so they were not capable of really keeping the foreign influences from having some impacts. You know, it wasn't until we had our 1812 war and finally put Britain at bay, and then Britain finally said, okay, we recognize you. And then we were able to peacefully move forward with the rest of the world. Because when Britain finally gave up and let us go, then the French knew that, okay, well, there's no point in messing with them. And shortly thereafter, we ended up getting a Statue of Liberty. Interesting. Anyway, and it was a token of appreciation for our previous relationship, with them. Anyway, paragraph 14. These considerations speak a persuasive language to every reflecting and virtuous mind and exhibit the continuance of the Union as a primary object of patriotic desire. Is there a doubt whether a common government can embrace so large a sphere? Let experience solve it. To listen to mere speculation in such a case were criminal. We are authorized to hope that a proper organization of the whole, with the auxiliary agency of governments for the respective subdivisions, will afford a happy issue to the experiment. And so when we get back, we're going to be going into the next paragraph where Washington starts to rail about parties as he sees the formation moving forward of a Republican Party and the Federalist Party, which is just a couple years down the road. But with that, we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so we're closing out paragraph 14, and we'll start it off with a very short sentence. And he says, this is Washington speaking, George Washington. It is well worth a fair and full experiment, this government, this experiment that they've created, with such power and obvious motives to union, affecting all parts of our country, while experience shall not have demonstrated its impracticability, there will always be reason to distrust the patriotism of those who in any quarter may endeavor to weaken its bands. Now, we should be questioning the patriotism of anyone that is pushing for party over compliance to the Constitution. We should question and challenge anyone's patriotism when it comes to not complying to the Constitution. Any politician that stands up and says, this country needs to be giving you blah, is a violation of the Constitution, what any constitutional candidate would say. is we need to amend the Constitution to give you this, to do these things. We feel that this is necessary for us to do. We ask that you consider amending the Constitution, because until the Constitution is amended, we cannot do these things. But instead, they do whatever they wish and desire, and they convince you that they can give these things to you, and it is all in noncompliance to the Constitution. So, paragraph 15, and this starts off, we're talking about parties here. And then the following, 16, gets into talking about amending the Constitution. So 15, Washington states this, in contemplating the causes which may disturb our union, it occurs as matter of serious concern that any ground should have been furnished for characterizing parties by geographical discriminations, northern and southern, Atlantic and western, whence designing men may endeavor to excite a belief that there is a real difference of local interest and views. One of the expedient, and let me stop right there. The way they carved up, the way they created and delegated these defined powers, these powers are commonly powers needed by all quarters of this republic. When they start going down the path of handing out welfare and housing and entitlements to the populace, then they are putting the populous states over the less populated states. And so that's how they start dividing and conquering, starting to create voter blocks because, oh, you need this and because you need this and so forth. One of the experiments of party to acquire influence within particular districts is to misrepresent the opinions and aims of other districts. You cannot shield yourself too much against the jealousies and heartburnings which spring from these misrepresentations. They tend to render alien to each other those who ought to be bound together by fraternal affection. The inhabitants of our Western country have lately had a useful lesson on this head. They have seen in the negotiation by the executive and in the unanimous ratification by the Senate of the treaty with Spain and in the universal satisfaction at that event throughout the United States a decisive proof how unfounded were the suspicions propagated among them of a policy in the general government and in the Atlantic states unfriendly to their interests in regard to the Mississippi. They have been witnesses to the formation of two treaties, that with Great Britain and that with Spain, which secured to them everything they could desire in respect to our foreign relations towards confirming their prosperity. Will it not be their wisdom to rely on the preservation of these advantages on the Union by which they were procured? Will they not henceforth be deaf to those advisers, if such there are, who would sever them from their brethren and connect them with aliens? You got to also understand that down the road there became a disenfranchised Northeast from, you know, Connecticut and North, a part of New York as well, when Jefferson was president with the embargoes and some of those other things. These Northerners were very upset with how they were going down this path. And by the time Madison was engaged in the War of 1812, they were actually having a convention to consider secession from the Union. Now, it wasn't until after they had signed the treaty with Britain, had, you know, these buffings or these ill feelings of the Northerners, you know, they were boiling to a point where they wanted to secede. They even had the Connecticut Convention. And so what I think is interesting is that after they recognized the Treaty Peace of Ghent that came out, they go, oh, well, I guess we don't have to worry And they didn't, and most of their complaints literally fell flat, and they just, it was like a waste of their time. But this next paragraph, paragraph 16, gets into the importance of amending the Constitution. And this is what Washington says. To the efficacy and permanency of the Union, a government for the whole is indispensable. No alliance, however strict, between the parts can be an adequate substitute. They must inevitably experience the infractions and interruptions which all alliances in all times have experienced. Sensibly of this momentous truth, you have improved upon your first essay by the adoption of the Constitution of Government better calculated than your former for an intimate union. And for the efficacy management of your common concerns, this government, the offspring of our own choice, uninfluenced and unawed, adopted upon full investigation and mature deliberation, completely in its principles, in the distribution of powers, uniting security with energy and containing within itself a provision for its own amendment, has a just claim on your confidence and your support. Respect with its authority, compliance with its laws, acquiescence in its measures are duties enjoined by the fundamental maxims of true liberty. I need to read that again. Respect. So we have this Constitution. This is what was created. Respect for the Constitution's authority, compliance with its laws. In other words, compliance with its limitations, not just the laws that come from it, but the hard limitations. Acquiescence in its measures are duties enjoined by the fundamental maxims of true liberty. The basis of our political system is the right of the people to make and to alter their constitutions of government. But the Constitution, which is at any time exists till changed by an explicit and authentic act of the whole people, is sacredly obligatory upon all. Let me reread this to you because this is gold. But the Constitution, which at any time exists till changed by an explicit and authentic act of the whole people, is sacredly obligatory by all. In other words, whether you like it or not, we have to follow the Constitution of the United States. Period. There's no choice on it. We must follow it until the amendment goes through. So if you want the entitlement state, you have to wait until the amendment. You just don't open up the public purse and start doling out. If there's a need for corporate welfare and they don't have the authority in this existing Constitution, they have to amend it first before they dole out a penny to any corporation. And they have to make significant changes to this Constitution because they are also tied to the uniformity clause. In other words, they can't give one state for corporate welfare purposes anything greater than what they give the other states. So if you understand the genius of this Constitution, it makes it very, very hard to be able to implement an entitlement state. It requires a major revamping, and this is why the federal government should never be involved in doling out money. When states need help, it should come from the states themselves. It's just like when your neighbor needs help, it should come from you, the neighbors. You should not be compelled by government to take from you and give to those who they think need it. You should have the compassion in your heart to be able to help and lift up those who need lifting up. That's how it's supposed to work, my friends. That's how Christ told us to do it. You cannot be saved by the actions of government, or you cannot get the credit of compassion when government takes from you and gives to those who they deem need it. And with that, We are at a hard break. So when we come back, we're going to get back into more Washington talking about party again. And so because he's going back and forth a little bit. And so he will be talking about party when we come back from these two next promos. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back after this. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. And so in this episode, we will be hitting the middle of Washington's farewell address. And so I'm not sure if you've ever seen Monty Python's, what was that movie? The Meaning of Life. At the very kind of center point of the movie, there's a guy, welcome to the middle, and he unzips himself and steps out. Anyway, so we'll be hitting the middle part. So this is a very lofty, very invigorating farewell address by George Washington, and he covers a lot of insightful bases. One of the things that I would lend you to, because I made at the very beginning in the previous episode when we started his farewell address, I pointed out that there are those who believe Hamilton was the contributor to this and not Madison. I believe Washington kept what Madison gave him and stuck with what Madison gave him. One of the ways you can tell is by the communications that General Washington, or actually President Washington, conveyed. Most every single one of his early communications was written at the hands of James Madison. And so in doing so, you could kind of see Madison's voice in those communications. Or I should say, when you look at the voice of Washington when Madison was writing them and the voice in this farewell address, it's not too far parted. And I'm just I'm here to tell you that this really speaks to me far more of Madison's language and voice than it does from Hamilton. But that being what it is, now at paragraph 17, Washington dives back into party, and he starts off saying, "All obstructions to the execution of the laws, all combinations and associations under whatever plausible character with the real design to direct, control, counteract, or awe the regular deliberation and action of the constituted authorities are destructive of the fundamental principle, or of this fundamental principle, and of fatal tendency. They serve to organize faction to give it an artificial and extraordinary force to put in the place of the delegated will of the nation, the will of party, often a small and artful and enterprising minorities of the community, and according to their alternate triumphs of the parties, to make the public administration the mirror of the ill-concerted and incongruous projections or projects of faction, rather than the organ of consistent and wholesome plans digested by common councils and modified by mutual interest. Let's take a quick break and let's look at how some factions are operating. Let's just look at the abortion faction and how it operates, because people have actually created a divisive tone of abortion and life, right? So what they call a pro-choice, pro-life. Well, the reality is, and it comes this clear, does the federal government have any jurisdiction? Has it been given and delegated anything over that matter? No. Then why is the party even allowing it to take a position on something for the federal government that it has no jurisdiction on? In other words, those people who want to kill babies have been able to submerge and sideline our true interest, which is individual liberty and individual sovereignty, and keeping federal government from allowing it to actually take on powers it's not supposed to have. So these people that are pro-abortion and pro-choice have sidelined and actually have done more harm because of their selfish needs. This is an issue with the state, period. And the homosexual movement, LGBT, whatever you want to call it, these are selfish people as well, because they only care about serving themselves and their agenda. There is nothing within this Constitution that has the government's jurisdiction over anything regarding sexuality or education or energy or housing or health care or health at all or welfare at all. There is a plethora of things that the federal government does not have jurisdiction over that it is attending jurisdiction to, my friends. What's it going to take? We have to get them focused back on the things that they've been delegated. And if we allowed ourselves to focus on getting them to focus on compliance, or getting them into compliance, then so many of our problems will go away. They may exist at the state level, but that's where you need to relish them. Because the states are going to go to and fro on these issues. And it's best that that's what they do. But the federal government has no business doing anything that it has no delegated authority to it to do. That's why I constantly tell you that every time you allow them to open their court doors to say, come hither and we will make a decision on something we have no jurisdiction on, you have just surrendered your authority to them. Don't allow it anymore. So paragraph 18, Washington continues on and says, however, combinations or associations of the above description may now and then answer popular ends. They are likely in the course of time and things to become potent engines by which cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men will be enabled to subvert the power of the people and to usurp for themselves the reins of government, destroying afterwards the very engines which have lifted them to unjust dominion. Now, I've got to read this once again. This is paragraph 18. As Washington talks about the factions and how they divide us over issues that are selfish and have nothing to do with the principles of government. And he says, however, this is paragraph 18, however, combinations or associations of the above description may now and then answer popular ends, they are likely in the course of time and things to become potent engines by which cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men will be enabled to subvert the power of the people and to usurp for themselves the reins of government, destroying afterwards the very engines which have lifted them to unjust dominion. If you understand the Convention of States movement, there are many good patriots that are involved in that because they are so frustrated, they don't know what else to do. They don't understand that there is a mechanism of compliance because they've been convinced that the Convention of the States is the only constitutional process availed to them. I am here to tell you that you have to not understand that those things that are not delegated to the federal government in that Constitution are reserved to the states. So the auditing process of the Constitution is not the responsibility of the federal government. It is the responsibility of the states to audit and to keep them in check. Because it's not listed does not mean that it is not constitutional. The Constitution only dictates very specific powers to the federal government. It creates restraints, and the only restraints that it places on the states are right there in Article 1, Section 10. If it is not restrained by the Constitution, such as auditing, defined in Article 10, or Article 1, Section 10, sorry, had to get my bearings about me because I was just a little hyper, a little going here. Anyway, if it is not listed there in Section 10 of Article 1, then the states have every right and authority to exercise these powers of auditing and oversight over the Constitution, which is why in 1798, Madison and Jefferson sought to execute what we call Republic Review instead of, like, you know, the John Birch Society creating an organization to go out and teach everybody how they're going to educate their way out of this mess. Or, like the Meckler and the Convention of State folks, oh, well, we're going to convene a convention, and we're going to amend the Constitution and make them comply. Both directions, the status quo and the Convention of States, are impotent in fixing the problem. The states have to conjoin. They have to unite once again on the fundamental principles of individual liberty, individual sovereignty, and upon their authority over this Constitution, and hold their subcontractor, the general government, hold the general government compliant to the Constitution. It is the only way forward. So we are finishing this episode, wrapping up on paragraph 18. We'll be back in our next episode with paragraph 19. So please be back. This is G.R. Mobley. Sorry for the bad English. This is G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.